Subbing for Captain Hayes, O-Dog, and Noodles, who have some well-deserved time off. They needed it.
I think they did. They got to get revved up. There's an 82-game season coming
NHL. Nothing's faster than O-Dog heading for summer vacations.
No, nobody loves it more. Yeah. I was so happy I got to see those guys in person when we did Free Agent Frenzy the other week. It was the first time that I actually put eyes on any of them in real life.
In over a year, right?
About 18 months. So that was it was a nice send-off before everyone scattered. It was nice to see them in person.
Well, that's the other thing. The TSN parking lot after the Free Agent Frenzy is like...
I couldn't find a parking spot that day, though. I forgot that, like, what it's like when actual people are here, and it's just, it's very...
They didn't have the extra bus to bring you in.
I'm in the auxiliary parking lot. I was like, I'm not that high up to have a great parking spot, but I'm not James Duthie. I don't just pull in right next to the door and
He's got to get on. I mean, if he doesn't get on, nobody else does. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Leo Rotens, TSN Raptors and NBA analyst, of course... Kyle moving to Miami. It's not worked out, but it's going to happen. And DeMar DeRozan apparently going to Chicago. So we'll get through all that. And really, you waited for the draft to figure out which way the Raptors were going to go because it was talked they were going to move the pick. And when they didn't, they went, okay. And then you were stunned by who they picked. And then you saw the guy and you went, this is a nice fit. And then all of a sudden you go, okay, so they're going younger. Where does it leave Kyle? Well, he's gone. So the remaining question is, Masai, is he coming back? But everything else is sort of gone in the other direction of, instead of trying to tape things back together and take another run, it's like a reboot, and not maybe a rebuild, but they are going younger.
Yeah, it feels like the Raptors are somewhere between a reboot and a rebuild. They're definitely going in a younger direction, but Fred VanVleet can kind of be that guy almost that Lowry's sort of passing the torch to here in Toronto and saying, you're committed here long term. You've been able to watch what Lowry does, how he manages the on-court, off-court dynamics, how he's that mentor. He keeps everybody on an even keel. He brings the energy. He can bring that fire, the passion. And that's what you need when you have young players, is you need a guy who is here committed to the franchise long haul, the way that Lowry has been. And kind of takes over as the face a little bit. And you've got Gary Trent Jr. and some other great players that are going to be here. But it's a different group. It's a different dynamic. And when it's younger players, they're going to have to find their legs, find where they fit. And then you find the style that works for you as a team. And they're fortunate to have a great coach in Nick Nurse, who, you know, as we know him to be, gregarious guy. Players love him. Passionate, fiery at the same time. You know that... he wants to win, and there'll be that push, that drive for it. But so it's not a full-on rebuild, but it's also, as Lowry's exit shows you, they're not in a position, it doesn't look like at least, that, you know, this year they're going to be in that conversation for a championship.
Yeah, there's a couple of things the Raptors have an exclusive on that you don't see regularly in any league. You're confident that they can develop people, which is a nice thing to be able to do. That doesn't happen much in the NBA. It's a top-heavy league. That happens in other leagues. And you're also confident in their personnel decisions, which is really great to have a team where whatever the front office decides, instead of the criticism or second-guessing, you go, well, it's worked out for them before. I can't recall one player call that under the Masai Ujiri regime where you went, no, that was a bad move. I couldn't name you one.
Well, and then you wonder, is that why they hedged at the trade deadline with Lowry? Did they, you know, did they not want to make the wrong decision and you know, have that play out in a way that did not maybe reflect what they've done in the past, which, as you say, has been smart moves. And they've made tough decisions, too, you know, getting, making the trade for DeMar and, you know, getting rid of Dwayne Casey and after a great season. Yes, you ran into LeBron James a few times in the postseason, but at the same time, the hard decisions the Raptors have always made and the direction that they've gone, you get the buy-in when your choices have led to proper outcomes in the past. It's the buy-in is tough if there's another Toronto team that we talk about a lot. The buy-in is tougher when the decisions aren't leading you where you want to go. And as a player, you see that, or as a fan, you see that, yeah, you're making decisions, but your decisions aren't leading you where you want to go. But for the Raptors, yes, they can develop talent because they have. Yes, they can attract talent because they have. They're not afraid to do what they have to do to get the right personnel in. So that's where I think as a player, especially, you can feel confident that maybe it won't be this year, but we're not in a full-on rebuild that's going to take however many more years before we're contenders again.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we analyze the Raptors, you go, I don't know how they're going to do it, but I know they're going to do it. So that's
the potential's always there.
Yeah. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Joe Bowen. Mr. Bowen, are you poolside?
No. Actually, James, I've been playing a lot of golf and looking forward to the social event of the summer coming up very shortly.
And that is the Ludzie?
Well, the wedding of
yes, that's true.
And we're having a big do for him, or I'm part of the big do for him at Wooden Sticks here in a couple of weeks. We're looking forward to that. And a lovely young lady that is sitting with you is part and parcel of all of this.
Well, Joe, what have you thought of what the Leafs have been up to this off season so far? What's your reaction to some of their additions here?
Kristen, I think kind of both, I suppose, expected because of what they have decided to do with the core, and to some extent, a little bit disappointed, I suppose. I mean, I would love to have had Nick Foligno here for a full season. Rental players and trades at the deadline can be really, really good, or they can all of a sudden kind of blow up in your face. And he was never healthy enough to be the factor that I think that everybody felt that he would be. But when you don't have enough money in the in the bank in order to sign players, I guess they have enough money, they just aren't allowed to use it. You have to go around and do things differently. And Kyle Dubas has had to kind of go around and try to fill in some holes with people that aren't 1A as far as the free agent list. So Nick Ritchie, David Kump, obviously the goaltender and Peter Mrazek, I think are solid signings. And it'll be interesting to see how they fit into the dynamic of what is expected of them. I think Kemp is going to be looked at as a try to become a real good checking center, and maybe this is an idea that they're going to actually put together a line that is entrusted with shutting down the opponent's top threesome. I love Peter Mrazek. I think he's an excellent goaltender. Jim Bedard, who is a dear friend of mine from my days of traveling with the Sudbury Wolves, when he was the long-time goalie coach for the Detroit Red Wings, just used to rave about Mrazek when he first started to come into the league. So I'm looking forward to him and Campbell being a good duo. But the bottom line is just the big boys have got to be the big boys, and they have to perform as well as they did in the regular season last year, and they have to perform a lot better in the first round of the playoffs.
Bonesy, as you watched Montreal advance into the Stanley Cup final, did you alter how you thought about the Leafs and their elimination, or would you have the same opinion?
No, Jimmy, I mean, the game's a wonderful game. And I often said, and Harry Neal's line about this game is a lot more fun if you don't know what everybody makes. Well, the bottom line was is the Montreal Canadiens caught a little bit of lightning in the jar. I mean, what happens if Galchenyuk doesn't cock the puck up and it's a 2-on-0 for the winning goal in game 5? Well, then the whole dynamic and the whole equation becomes completely different. But they all, from that point on, they all got on the rope and pulled together. I don't think anybody thought the Montreal Canadiens were going to the Stanley Cup final when they were down 3-1, but that's the great thing about this league is that there are tremendous players in it. They don't all have to be making the big-time salary. And if they decide that they're going to play better defense than your top offensive players and don't allow them to have the room, then all of a sudden lots of funny things can happen. And the Canadians caught lightning in a jar, and they all pulled on the rope at the same time and caught enough breaks, certainly in overtime they did, and went to the Stanley Cup final.
Well, Joe, what was your reaction to Zach Hyman moving on from this team, and how difficult will it be for the Leafs to move on themselves and to not replace what he does, because you can't with anyone they currently have to the same degree, but just to evolve past Zach Hyman and continue to, to try and stay on course?
You know, Kristen, we fall in love with players here in Toronto for various reasons, and Zach's reason was that he put out every shift. He worked real hard. I mean, he wasn't the greatest offensive talent, although he was getting better. But the amount of money that the Edmonton Oilers were ready to throw at him and for the length of the contract, I couldn't see it happening in Toronto. Not unless a bunch of the core players that they have built on, at least one of them had to be dealt. And then sign me up and find out which one of those guys is on the list, at the bottom of that list, that would have been dealt. So, yes, they will have to find somebody. Nick Ritchie will be a bigger body, and he'll be probably a lot more nasty than Zach Hyman was. Will he be as effective? Hard to say. We'll wait and see. But where the Leafs were as far as Hyman and where Edmonton really decided to go overboard was interesting. I thought that's an awful lot of money to pay for a player that's not going to be in the top, 20 in scoring, maybe in the National Hockey League. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But he may change my thoughts on that. But at that particular point, the Leafs' hands were handcuffed. They had no way of going anywhere with it unless they decided to trade one of the big six that they have.
You know, Bonesy, I kind of like this, what they've done. Obviously you'd like Zach to stay, but that didn't happen. But, there's an open audition on the left side. There's some audition on the third and fourth lines, and maybe that's sort of a way to reconfigure things and see and find different elements. Because I think everybody last year was looking for the one guy to walk through the door that would deliver a Stanley Cup. Well, it's not one guy, it's 20. So, I mean, this sort of forces people to reexamine their own games, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I've been talking to people off the ledge after all of this, too. And you hearken back to the Boston Bruins in the infancy of Marchand and Bergeron. And they blew a 3-0 lead to the Philadelphia Flyers and then were taught and hopefully learned mental toughness. And that's something that has to be acquired. And the only way you acquire that is by going through disappointment. And most teams that go on to any success have gone through some bitter disappointment. And the Tampa Bay Lightning are no different. They've gone back-to-back in Stanley Cup after a horrific dismissal at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So for everyone to be, so upset and, blow it up, do this, tear this apart, you have to understand that you got to go through this. And it's not fun. It's not pleasant. No one likes it. And you hope that the players are the one that like it the least, because they have to learn this mental toughness to go through. And any changes that this management team decides to make between now and next year's postseason will be very interesting, but we'll all have to have that kind of approach to it when they get into the postseason.
Well, what about this team defensively? I mean, you lose Zach Bogosian. You've still got Travis Dermott. You've got Justin Hall. You have the young players in Sandin and Liljegren. When you think about what adjustments are they going to have to make on that back end in order to, a little bit replace what Bogosian brings, and then also to give Sandin and Liljegren, it kind of feels to me like this is a little bit of okay, let's do or die with these young players. Let's find out what we've got in them. Let's give them the chance. Do you feel similarly that this is kind of the time to figure out where they might fit in the picture?
Well, historically, I think, Kristen, anybody that plays defense in the National Hockey League is not going to do it well, defensively at least, in his first or second or third year as they learn the position. Now, they have had the opportunity to not rush Sandin and Liljegren into the mix. They have certainly bided their time and certainly have done well at the American Hockey League level. So it is time that one or both of them are able to, step in. I think they also need to find someone with the kind of tenacity and physicality of Zach Bogosian, whether that's at the beginning of the year or at the trade deadline. But I think that you have to go. I mean, both of these kids were first-round draft picks, and they really haven't been given an opportunity yet to demonstrate why they were picked that high, I think, as far as the length of tenure with the Maple Leafs at the NHL level. So let's see what happens. I think that's something that will be obviously one of the sidebar stories to the entire effort. And obviously the goaltending is going to have to be very good in behind them. But one of the other aspects of it is this team did very well last year, improved defensively by a long shot, and they're going to have to continue that trend. And that's not just the defenseman, that's the forward complement and the goaltending.
Yeah, and especially for Leaf fans, when the team exits, albeit in the first round, there's that massive analysis that happens where you want everything changed, and you know, you can't do that. But you think back to Montreal and the flawless penalty kill. I mean, if one of the two special teams on the Leafs, or if one other element of the team could operate with that kind of efficiency, you could go back and edit all the other games and come up with a different outcome.
If ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a very Merry Christmas.
I hope you there registered you that.
I heard another. Never mind. But you're right. And that's what makes this sport so great. It really is. And there are a lot of variables. There's a lot of different things that get involved. Attitude and atmosphere in a dressing room is, by all means, I think, the most important aspect of any team in the NHL. And again, I go back to the fact that all of these players are very, very good hockey players. And when they all get on the same page and you get that attitude and atmosphere going, a lot of very important things come about. Now, all of this comes with experience, too. And so now this core group is obviously in a position where it's no longer viewed as a young, growing bunch of young kids. It is hardened NHL players, and they're going to have to develop and produce and nurture that atmosphere and attitude in the dressing room so that everyone is on the same page. And that's an important aspect of those young people. Marner and Matthews and Nylander have got to be there. John Tavares, obviously, is one that's going to be a veteran leader, and so is Morgan Rielly. But those are the things that have to happen here, and it has to happen fairly quickly, because I don't know if another disappointment down the road would allow this group to stay together.
So then, Joe, do you believe or not believe that the Leafs are going to be perhaps as bad compared to their division rivals this season as is being predicted? I mean, you hear pundits say they'll be fourth or fifth in the division. What do you think?
I don't believe in that at all, Kristen, to be honest with you. I mean, everybody said, oh, the Canadian division was no good. Well, maybe it was. We had a team that went to the damn Stanley Cup final. So, I mean, again, it will be a competitive division. And the difference between first and fifth may not be an awful lot of points. I don't think anybody's going to be allowed to run away with it, regardless of having the Stanley Cup champion in the division. But I think it'll be a real good test, and it'll be a day-in and day-out grind for anyone in this division in order to make sure that you get into the postseason. So I think it's going to be very competitive, but I think the Maple Leafs still have a great deal of talent there and can certainly, if not win the division, be in the conversation for spots 2 and 3 anyway.
Joe, as you described the games in the Montreal series, tell us the difference from William Nylander this year to previous years, and do you think that Marner and Matthews will follow suit?
Well, Willie had a good postseason. There's no question about that. And I think one of the things that we saw in Willie throughout the postseason and even in the season, he was more engaged. He was more engaged physically. He was more engaged in puck pursuit and recovery. And I think that was something that was, you know, very much on display during the postseason. I think that, you know, I mean, Austin Matthews could have scored what, 3-4 more goals in that series with Montreal with goal posts and chances that he had? You don't get as many chances in the postseason. You just don't. But had he, all of this narrative is completely different. So I think that Marner will be fine. I think if you're talking about two guys that are on the All-Star team, for crying out loud. And these are being picked by people, not just in Toronto by any stretch of the imagination, but league-wide. So sometimes you have to go and talk to people in other organizations and say, what do you think of so-and-so? And guess what? Their opinion sometimes is quite a bit different and somewhat refreshing, I might add, too.
Bonesy, thanks very much, and I hope you get by the pool eventually.
Well, we'll work on that. We're looking forward to the golf, and congratulations to everyone, and looking forward to hosting Bobby and pepping him out as we should. Congratulations, Kristen.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Bowen, join us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's time to Toyota right now. Drive away with the new 2021 Corolla LE upgrade for the same price as the Corolla LE. So, free upgrade. Duh. MapleToyota.ca is where you want to go with that. You know, what I will say about the Leafs is the year that you are convinced, and I'm sort of talking to myself, the year that you are convinced it's not going to happen is the year it'll happen.
It's the lack of expectations that I just think is going to make such a difference for this team this year. And I express this, and people say I'm crazy. They're like, it's not going to have an impact. But there's something about young players coming into the league who have been saddled with pressure, expectation, all of the, it's like the weight of 100 years on your shoulders, and it didn't...
54.
Well, okay, fine. If you want to be particular about the actual timings. Yeah. But it's just, it's a huge weight. And they were young, they were teenagers basically when they started here, and now they're older. They've been through the ringer a little bit. They've experienced these disappointments, and going into this year, they're not favored to win. It's not like that's what anybody expects of them. So now you just get to play hockey, and you just, you know, there's going to be adjustments. They will still be a good team, but it's not like, oh, well, Stanley Cup, right? Like this, it's not necessarily where you're putting them going into the year. And so you can grow into it. You can have your time in the beginning of the season figuring out who's going to play where, how do these new bodies fit in, without necessarily feeling the expectation like this past season where it's, you're playing in the North Division, everyone had anointed them winners before it even started, but there was just that sense that the regular season went so well, and then they get to the playoffs and the wheels fall off because the adversity wasn't really there for them too much during the season.
Right.
Only 13 regulation losses, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of sustained adversity, but this has been a very long offseason, I would think, for them after how things transpired in the playoffs. You've had a lot of time to sit and think about it. You're going to have a long 7 months with a nice Olympic break potentially in there, too, of 3 more weeks where you're waiting to get to the playoffs and prove them wrong. But the pressure at the beginning of the season, I don't think, will be there, and I do think that that's going to help them.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, if you had to write a book for last year, you'd write 3 games in Edmonton and then some really sarcastic line underneath. Because that was it, right?
3 games in Edmonton and then just black out these 2 weeks and then we're back on track. That was what we talked about so much, if they could just bottle it. If there's moments for the Leafs that extend weeks at a time in a season, sometimes a series, sometimes games at a time, where you just see them at their best and you wonder, why can't you sustain it? And then you get to the playoffs and you see them, games 2, 3, and 4, especially, were just, after that first game loss, it was fantastic. And
better.
Then
where did it
go wrong? Was it just in game, we know when they lose in overtime, and did that just rattle their brains so much that they forgot to believe in themselves after that? It's just, it's wild to think about how those moments of where you need to be mentally tough, the Leafs have fallen short in recent years. And just, it's the same against Boston in game 6 when they could have, you know, closed it out at home the year before.
Yep.
It's the same when you're in the bubble against Columbus and you have the huge overtime win. You know, you get to overtime, you win, and then you have a chance to close it out and you can't. They can't get over the hump of closing it out. So how do you get there? Because it's all anyone's going to talk about. Anyone's going to ask you about.
Yep. Well, you know, and game 4 was a 4-0 win in Montreal. That is perfect. I remember saying on the broadcast to you, that was a perfect hockey game, and then never to be revisited.
And it's the same with those games in Edmonton last year. You don't even have to describe anymore what they were. Everybody knows. You talk about those March games in Edmonton, and everybody knows what the Leafs were at that stretch, and then where it went from there when they went into Vancouver, and it just wasn't the same team. It didn't look the same. It didn't feel the same. It was a strange turn, but that's the mental toughness. That's the killer instinct. That's any number of superlatives you want to put on it. That's where the Leafs have been lacking. And the good thing is you can fix it. if you want to. It's sure. because it's a mindset. It's not a lack of talent. The Leafs could be a much less talented team, and that's a much harder to fix. They have the talent. They need the right mindset. And yeah. mindset, at least, you'd like to think you can fix that.
I'm going to go with 3 games in Edmonton. Sorry, guy. That's my book title.
Bookmark it. Yes. Trademark it now, Jim.
That's right. Okay. I got to get out of here to phone up my lawyer. Coming up next, Leo Routens. This is Overdrive, watching on TSN 4, listening on TSN 1050.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten any messages yet from them just being like, yeah, we're at the pool. Here's a pick.
That's right.
That's yeah. where I imagine them there, that they are right now. But
or O-Dog is probably, you know, marking up his scorecard.
Oh, on the link somewhere. Yes. He's teeing it up. Yeah. Got to get those rounds in now.
I asked him to come on. I think it was game day last week or the week before. Guy, I'm golfing. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Just pulling a Ray Ferraro. At least Ray still calls from the golf course. So, that's right. Yeah. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Crazy. We're going to have... he's with us. Okay, good. Leo Routens is here, NBA analyst on the Raptors games. And of course, former number one draft pick by the Philadelphia 76ers. Leo, how are you?
I'm great. What are you guys up to?
You know, filling in for the regulars. You know, that happens.
Yeah. That's what we do. Yeah. Just the fill-ins.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
So tell us how big Kyle Lowry's shoes are. I mean, how do they go about replacing him?
Well, they're huge, right? You're not going to replace Kyle Lowry. What you're going to try to do is, you know, you're going to go in a different direction. Now, part of that's been somewhat anticipated, right? Fred VanVleet has been learning the game under Kyle. He's been working alongside of Kyle, and he's certainly a player that we've seen that in Kyle's absences, he's played at an all-star level, and playing with Kyle, he's been, you know, as good and able to contribute in so many different ways. So, you know, I think with Fred there, you kind of have that easy transition, but quite honestly, you're not feeling Kyle's shoes. He's just a unique player. He's a special player. He's a guy that, you know, won games. He could win games without making a shot. You know, he influences so many different things on the floor. And you know, he's going to be missed. And you know, like I said, I think the Raptors now, you know, have kind of a framework and a plan in which direction they want to go in. And some good pieces to begin that process.
Well, Leo, do you think there was ever any chance of Lowry staying in Toronto, or is it just that the team has gone in such a different direction in the last couple of seasons that it wouldn't have made sense for where he's at in his career?
You know, I think there definitely was a chance. I think this issue is pretty much more financial than really anything else. You know, when you want to do kind of one of those legacy deals, there's got to be a lot of compromise on both sides. And if you're Kyle Lowry, if you can get $90 million at the age of, you know, 35, 36, you're going to jump on that. Why wouldn't you? And so I think it's a situation where it wasn't in the Raptors' best interest moving forward to spend that kind of money. And for Kyle, it's a situation where he's got a great relationship with Masai and Bobby Webster and the entire organization. And, you know, they work together, to facilitate, a sign and trade and get him to where he wanted to be. And if you can't do a legacy deal, you know, I think that's the way you want to do it, right? You want to end on a real high note as far as the relationship goes, and that's something that we haven't seen really happen. You know, I think there was always an outside chance. Do you know what I think really happened? Back when the trade deadline was up, a lot of people got scared of Kyle's ask for this year. He made it clear what he wanted his numbers. And, you know, Miami was one of those teams at the trade deadline, if you remember, everybody was talking about being a potential suitor for Kyle. And then think about what happened since that time. All the teams that were rumored to be chasing Kyle, Miami, Lakers, what happened to them in the playoffs? They all fizzled, right? And everybody during the whole time during the playoffs was saying, oh, sure, okay, and you didn't want to trade Kyle. Okay, who'd you want to keep? Who was worth it for you to keep and not go get Kyle now that you're getting knocked out? And then another thing happened during the playoffs. Chris Paul, a guy at 36 years old, having a great season, took his team right to the NBA Finals. And I think that all of a sudden that age factor started to become a little less of a hindrance, with teams looking around and going, okay, you know, we could have had him. He might have made a difference. Chris Paul's doing it. Okay, let's take a chance. So, you know, I even spoke to Kyle during the playoffs, and I said, you know, you're in a great situation right now. You're sitting at home watching, and your value is going up by the day. And he couldn't say no. That's exactly what was happening.
Leo, talk to us about player development for the Raptors, because I trumpet this all the time. I think it's off the charts. And so when you were talking about Freddie earlier, I suddenly got a flashback to those images of when he didn't play, how he was basically an assistant coach, so he can be a playing coach like Kyle was. And certainly when you see their recent draft picks, they fooled a lot of people with number 4 overall, but then you understand that they have a specific plan that's a little maybe a little more wide-ranging than others. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, San Antonio used to be kind of the team that everybody looked at for that. And the Raptors, you know, I always remind people, when they won a championship, they were in development at the same time. I mean, you think about it. Fred, you know, OG, obviously he wasn't able to play in the championship, but, you know, Pascal, Norm, all these guys were part of the development, and they were being groomed and brought along at the same time as they won a championship. So the Raptors, you know, with their 905, and it really comes down to, you have to have that development piece like the 905 where the guys are going back and forth. And I'll tell you what, the pandemic has really done a number on that, because you just haven't been able to like with a Malachi Flynn, haven't been able to do a lot of things they did with Fred because of the inability to play off of the G League. But, you know, the Raptors have really done a great job of having guys going back and forth, developing, and the big component of that is great scouting. You have to be able to find those second-round picks, those undrafted guys that a lot of people are late first-rounders, that a lot of people are overlooking. And just same as picking Scottie Barnes. You know, a lot of people... You know, not in a negative way. I wasn't a huge proponent of Suggs taking him at 4. You know, I heard some people saying he's going to be a top 5 NBA player. Well, you know what? I'll send you a check when that happens, because I don't see that happening. But I see the potential of a Scottie Barnes, that he could be incredible in this league, especially with his body, his makeup. You know, you look at the players that have come out of Florida State, how they do. So, you know, if you want to have that development component, you can't be afraid of taking chances, and you got to trust your system to take a guy like that and get him where you believe he can get to. If you don't have that component, then you're wasting a pick. And then you just go with the guy that everybody says you should go with. And the Raptors march to a different drummer.
So, Leo, when you look at who's left in this free agency class, and maybe it's not the best one, but do you see any other potential targets for the Raptors? Do they need to do more? Do they potentially have some trades up their sleeves, you think, or is there a need for that? Like, where do they go now that they know that Kyle's gone and they have maybe some time now to figure things out?
Well, we haven't got the final word on the Miami deal, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. a sign and trade, and everybody's hearing, okay, you got this guy and you got this guy, but nobody's saying you got this guy. So, you know, you got to figure that there's still some conversations going on, maybe another team involved, trying to figure out the best way to make the sign and trade work. So I don't believe that's completed. And there's been a lot of rumors with Dragic and where he might end up if there is another team involved. So, you know, like I said, that's not a done deal. And the thing with Masai, and you know, they do their business right. When I say that is, you don't hear a lot of rumors. Like, anything you've heard about the sign and trade or anything you've heard with anybody else, it's not coming from them. It's not coming from within this organization. So, you know, there's no leaking. There's no... there's no rumors being thrown out there. They just go about their business in a real quiet way. So I think there will be more. You know, the Raptors do have a need up front. They're going to have some more size. Although I think they're heading in a direction to be extremely versatile with the players they have. where they can have players on the floor that can literally guard, you know, one through five. They're kind of heading in that direction. But, you know, obviously it takes a lot more pieces. So I think that, you know, you have to wait and see what bigs that they, you know, are they going to secure Ken Birch? Are they going to, you know, lock up Gillespie? Are they going to find some other bigs? So there's a lot more to be done. I don't think the free agency is by any means over for this team.
Leo, when you look at Gary Trent Jr., can you project what he turns into over the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of similarities. When you look at Norm and you look at Gary Trent Jr., you know, for what they bring to the table, there's a lot of similarities. Gary will handle the ball a little bit better. You know, Norm maybe a little bit better at the defensive end. Trent a better, you know, I think he can create his own shot a little bit better. So, but there's kind of a blend of the two, right? And, you know, with Trent, you're going a little younger and a little cheaper price wise. And also, you know, you kind of had certain limitations. I think they felt with Norm. And again, not in a negative way, but you get to know a guy, you see everything about him and you go, okay, you know, maybe we want a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. So, you know, I like Gary Trent Jr. I like his toughness. You know, he showed in a very brief period of time with the Raptors, he's not afraid to take big shots. He can make big shots. I think that he's got to get a little bit more comfortable with what Nick Nurse wants to do defensively, because I think he can be, and that's one of the things that impressed me when I watched him coming into Portland in the playoffs. I remember he was guarding, you know, LeBron James and giving up, you know, eight inches and not backing down at all, just getting right in his grill. So I think a lot of that toughness at the defensive end has to come to the forefront for the Raptors. But, you know, he's a good player. And again, but I think when you're looking at a guy like that, you kind of think if you kind of think Norm, you're kind of in that same kind of vision.
Well, just a quick one here. When you look at the league as a whole, when you see some of the moves that have been made so far, is there a team that's jumping out to you a little bit, like a potential front runner going into next season, or a team that's made moves that have impressed you so far?
Well, I mean, look at what the Lakers are doing. Every time you turn around, they're adding somebody, right? And you know, they're old. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I think they got 4 or 5 guys, 36 and older. They just added, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Kendrick Nunn. The Miami Heat didn't sign him. And remember, you know, he's had some great games against the Raptors in the past. He's a good player. So they're just adding pieces one after another. They picked up Dwight Howard. So, you know, they're older, but they got a lot of bodies and a lot of experience. So they can absorb the length of the season with depth. And so anybody that wants to downplay them because of their age, I'd say be careful of that. And then you look at Chicago's actually made some interesting moves. All of a sudden, they got DeMar DeRozan. They picked up, you know, Alex Caruso. You know, they're doing some different things there. So that's going to be a different looking team. And they haven't finished, you know, their business. So I think there's some interesting things going around the league that when it's all said and done, I think some of the top teams like the Nets and the Lakers may have gotten stronger, and some of the other teams have maintained. And then you got a team like, say, Philadelphia. What are they going to do? What's going to happen with Ben Simmons? So we're still a long way off of knowing, you know, where this is all going to shake out and who's going to be who.
Leo, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you. Leo Rotens, TSN Raptors and NBA analyst. At Leo Rotens is the Twitter account. And the Raptors story it's intriguing. I like what they do. And you know, when he's talking about drafting, you're thinking Leafs, Zach Hyman Jr., come on.
You're always thinking about the Leafs. It's always there in the back of your mind. No, but it's true. It's because they're on parallel courses in a lot of ways, because if they had the right coach, the right drafting, you make the tough decisions. You bring in a player like John Tavares the same way that the Raptors brought in, you know, a player like Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
You know, you've seen them attract those big free agents, and you've tried to put the pieces together. And for one team, it's happened. And for the other team, it just seems people talk about now they've taken a step back. But there's still optimism around the Raptors, right? Even when things maybe you see a player of Lowry's stature depart, and still there's optimism. Like, it's still going to be okay, whereas with the Leafs, it's just doom and gloom, and they're going to be, you know, fifth in the division, and they're not going to make the playoffs, and it's just very funny what a championship does for you.
I'm convinced that when the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, we could open the phones, and we're going to chat about why they didn't sweep.
Yeah. Or it's like, oh, that guy, he only had 2 points in the in this final series. We got to get rid of him.
I know, but it was the overtime winner. there won't be enough happiness. I mean, there'll be the explosion of happiness, and then suddenly, why didn't, we could have won in 3 games faster if this guy had done,
Oh, my gosh. But the takes are what make it so great, Jim. It's what makes this whole thing so great, is that if it ever happens for the Leafs, it'll just be the buildup.
Yes.
There's nothing like it in sports, I don't think.
It'll be a sleepover in the studio, that's for sure, because the streets will be clogged.
Don't even bother.
No, this is Overdrive on TSN 4 and TSN 1050. Jim Taddy, Kristen Chilton, subbing for Captain Hayes, Noodles and O-Dog. This is the most uncomfortable story that I think I've seen in a number of years. Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres. And, you could do the old analysis on the diminishing star player asset, but it's the injury and the treatment of it and the diagnosis that are troublesome to all of us, I think.
I think so. And when that all started playing out around 9:30 p.m. on a Friday, just with the statement coming out from his camp about how they felt about the Sabres' treatment of Eichel and his medical issues and getting the right treatment, and it makes you question, like, how involved is the athlete in their own care, and how important is that for them to have a say? Like, yes, you have doctors and you have team doctors and there's other physicians that can be involved, but at the end of the day, a person should still have a say in how they want their body treated, and you can't just, have an athlete be treated like a possession. You've got to have them as part of the conversation. So it sounded like, from what is coming out, like that hasn't been the case necessarily for Eichel. And obviously we don't know the ins and outs of everything behind the scenes, but it's disturbing to have that play out in the media and to have it be something that obviously couldn't be handled between the parties privately. It had to be something where his camp felt like that had to be said, so people knew that this is where he was at and why he was feeling the way that he was, and is that relationship broken now? Can he go back to the Sabres? It's a sad situation to see playing out in the media, for sure.
Yeah, it's odd. So 3 minutes left until we get to the top of the hour. I like what you said, ownership. You would think there'd be some sort of a mechanism in the CBA, an arbitrator or some neutral person that when you got a dispute like this could actually hear the player's side. And because in this case we're talking about a neck injury, could have long-term ramifications, not just as a player, but in quality of life. You'd like to believe that these things are there, but I don't know that we've ever been there before.
No, and you'd like to think that even if the team, obviously the owners who are paying the doctor to be on staff, and that physician, I guess, has to answer you in some situations. I mean, is that doctor not his own entity and say this is the best course of treatment, or is someone else in their ear saying this is what we want for the player, this is what your diagnosis needs to be? Those are the questions that it seems like start to crop up. I'm not saying in this situation, but in general with athletes is, do they have a say? Do they have a conversation with the doctor where this is how I feel, this is how I want to go get a second or third opinion? Nothing against you, but a normal person could get any number of opinions and make a decision based on that. You don't want to think that a person is being pigeonholed into one choice because that's what the, their employer thinks is what should be happening. So those are the types of things that creep into conversations like this, and it makes you wonder, is there enough protection for players in terms of the medical decisions that get made? Because it's not just about hockey. It's about the rest of their lives, too.
Yeah, and I'm not going to draw this as a direct comparison to the Sabres situation.
No.
But I do know in the United States that you could approach a team and want to become the official team medical staff, and you're going to pay for that. And I don't know, what anybody would determine as a conflict of interest or how that is set up and what the ramifications are and where the conflict is, but it's not quite like it is here.
No, it's a very different system, and especially when it comes to, you know, a team that's trying to win games and they want their star players out there. So you just, it's the same where Vladimir Tarasenko was having a similar issue with just feeling not like he wasn't getting the right care. So it's just, it's a conversation you'd rather not have, but you also want players to feel protected in their own medical decisions as well.
There's a lot more to this story than we have to pass on, but it's just awkward, all capital letters.
Yes, definitely a good word for it.
Yeah, okay, so coming up at the top of the hour, confirm or deny, which is going to sound like something else you're accustomed to, but we'll get into that. We're going to switch over, of course, to TSN 2 for 25 minutes, and then, of course, the Olympics will take over on the TV side, and when we continue on just on radio, it'll be Keegan Matheson talking about the Blue Jays, who are in the midst of a massive, massive welcome homestand, I guess is the way to say that. So that's coming up in hour number 3 on Overdrive, now watching, and we say goodbye to TSN 4, but we stay on TSN 1050.